Hello, this is your volunteer broadcaster, Steve Knipe, bringing you today's Navajo Hopi Observer. Some of the articles that I will be reading today include Nevaeh Yazzi, named Ms. Navajo Arts and Crafts Honors Grandmother. CCHHS celebrates opening of the Southern Region Office Birth to Five Play Space. And They're Here, Mysteries on the Reservation. And now, before we move to our first story, let me remind you that today's date is August 5th, 2026. So our first story is Nevaeh Yazzi is crowned Ms. Navajo Arts and Crafts, inspired by grandmother and commitment to culture. This story is by Todd Smith and a special to the Navajo Hopi Observer. It's datelined Window Rock. For Nevaeh Yazzi, being crowned Miss Navajo Arts and Crafts was more than winning a pageant. It was the realization of years of encouragement from her grandmother and a chance to represent her culture, her community, and the next generation of Navajo artists. Yazzi, who is from Twin Lakes, New Mexico, will be a junior at Tohatchee High School and earned the title after a weekend that celebrated Navajo artistry, culture, language, and tradition. "What really inspired me was my grandmother," Yazzi said. "She always told me to continue my culture, continue to talk Navajo, continue to advocate for it, and continue to be proud that you are Native American." When Yazzi's name was announced as the winner, she said the moment was overwhelming. "I was not expecting to win this title," she said. "I thought the other girls did an amazing job. But when my name was called, I was shocked. I was really happy. I was crying. And I looked straight at my grandma, and she was crying too." Standing beside Yazzi during the crowning was her grandmother, Rosita So, whose pride was evident as she watched her granddaughter achieve a lifelong goal. "I was just crying," So said. "I'm so happy for my granddaughter. She ran for it, she tried, and she got it. That makes me so happy." For So, the pageant represented more than a competition. It showcased the importance of families passing cultural knowledge from one generation to the next. "It was exciting to see all these people come and watch the girls," So said, "to see what they know and what grandparents have taught them, and that they were able to use it on stage." So said Yazzi has always embraced leadership opportunities through school and previous royalty programs, making her proud of how she represented both their family and community. "She always does her best whenever she's involved in activities at school," So said. "She has been royalty before, and she knows what she's doing. We've always been there for her. We support her all the way." For Yazzi, the title represents an opportunity to show that young people from small communities can make a meaningful impact. "It means that I can accomplish bigger things other than just being a girl from Twin Lakes," she said. "I want to continue my culture and show others that anything is possible." Throughout her reign, Yazzi hopes to be an outspoken ambassador for the Navajo people, while remaining connected to her roots. "I want to have an amazing time with this title and always remember where I come from," she said. She also hopes to shine a light on Twin Lakes, a community she says is often overlooked. "A lot of people don't know where Twin Lakes is," Yazzi said. "I'm really proud of my community, and now people will know where I come from." Like many contestants, Yazzi faced moments of self-doubt during the competition, particularly while performing on stage. "The most challenging part was getting nervous," she said. "I've been out of pageantry for a while, and I thought I might mess up. But when I did make a mistake, I just tried again and worked through it. as she begins her year as Miss Navajo Arts and Crafts, Yazzie hopes her journey inspires other young Navajo people to embrace their culture with confidence. "My message is to always be happy," she said. "No matter the sad times or the tough times, always be happy and always share gratitude, hospitality, and generosity." The outgoing Miss Navajo Arts and Crafts, Acacia Williams, said Yazzie now steps into a role that extends far beyond wearing a crown. Williams, who completed the inaugural reign as Miss Navajo Arts and Crafts, spent the past year promoting Navajo Native artists, encouraging people to shop Navajo by Navajo, and creating opportunities for artists to share the stories behind their work through initiatives such as Artist Mixer. "My biggest thing was promoting more artists," Williams said. "That's exactly what we did." Williams encouraged young people interested in future pageants to focus on learning traditional skills as much as competing for titles. "The jewelry isn't just for show," she said. "There's so much that goes into it." She encouraged youth to learn silversmithing, basket weaving, moccasin making, sash belt weaving, and other traditional arts to help preserve Navajo culture for future generations. With Williams passing the crown and Yazzie beginning her reign, both women share a common goal: ensuring Navajo traditions continue to thrive by inspiring young people to learn, create, and proudly represent their communities. For Yazzie, that mission begins with the lessons first taught by her grandmother, a reminder to speak the Navajo language, honor her heritage, and never forget where she comes from. Our next story is CCHHS celebrates the opening of Birth to Five play space. Maria Temprandola and the Navajo Hopi Observer is the author. Children crawled through the play tunnel with laughter, tapped rhythms on the play drum, and pointed excitedly at their favorite animals amid the vibrant colors of the newly painted wall mural. Families gathered beneath the reading tree during Thursday's unveiling of the Coconino County Health and Human Services, the CCHHS, New Birth to Five Play Space. CCHHS's Healthy Families program will use Family Spirit, an evidence-based Indigenous home visiting curriculum developed at the Johns Hopkins Center for Indigenous Health. Through that relationship, the program joined a five-year fellowship and during the fellowship became eligible for a $65,000 grant to build a play space for children funded through the Family Spirit Global Fellowship. The grant supports SPIRIT, which stands for Supporting Play and Intergenerational Relationships with Indigenous Traditions, an international initiative led by the Johns Hopkins Center for Indigenous Health in partnership with Indigenous groups across the United States, Australia, Canada, where it's called First Nations Health Authority, and New Zealand, where it's called the Aotearoa. The initiative is designed to support parents through early childhood development and prevent child abuse, according to Tamara Little Salt Butler, Health and Families Project Manager. It allows that population to be seen and provides that space where they can just have that joy and smile, Little Salt Butler said. It's part of the prevention of child abuse and neglect by supporting positive parent-child interactions. During the five-year fellowship with Family Spirit, the program became eligible for another grant opportunity to build a permanent and modern play space for children. Only a few sites were selected, including CCHHS. Little Salt Butler said organizers initially planned to annihilate the lobby in the Women, Infants, and Children, WIC, space, but instead decided to incorporate a permanent play area where children could play while parents receive services, rather than leaving families in a sterile waiting room. Community conversations with local residents generated about 80 design ideas that ultimately shaped the finished space. Those ideas included an Indigenous-inspired wall mural, reading tree, drum table, play tunnel, life-size magnetic building tiles, and mobile play space. The wall mural, titled A New Dawn, was created by local Hopi artist Dwayne Koyawina and co-artist Chelsea Bigudi. Little Salt Butler said the space would not have felt authentic without local artists contributing to the project. It was part of our goal to incorporate Indigenous themes and elements into the play space, and it was very difficult to do so in a genuine manner without incorporating the artistry from two local artists representing the two tribes that we have in this area. Little Salt said, without that color, I think the play space would have lacked cohesion, because I think it really sets the story and brings to light different elements of what the purpose of the grant is serving, which is promoting intergenerational play. Little Salt Butler said it is important to continue advocating for policies that support children and ensure they see themselves reflected in space. She said she wants the play space to be somewhere everyone feels comfortable and safe. Chibone Jimenez, Director of Innovations with the Family Spirit National Team, and Brooke Marks, Training Coordinator for the Family Spirit Team, said they wanted to create a space that embodies cultural connections while strengthening cultural identity. For me, it's that people feel empowered when they walk in and they see our relatives on our wall and the drum and all those different pieces that can resonate, Jimenez said. For Koyawina, creating that sense of belonging began with the artwork itself. He said he wanted visitors to be drawn to vibrant colors before discovering the hidden animals and details throughout the piece. Sherry Smith, a parent attending the event, said her husband was raised in the traditional Navajo way and has helped teach their children those traditions. She spoke well of the mural, saying it provides greater cultural exposure. I feel like it brings tradition alive, because nowadays a lot of kids don't get exposed to it. So this is an opportunity for them to learn about where they come from and the history behind it, Smith said, referring to the mural. Because right now, with my 5-year-old daughter, I'm struggling with how to present to her that she's Navajo. She's only 5. She's smart and understands. But to have her be proud of who she is because she is Navajo. Smith said she plans to use the mural to explain how animals play an important role in Navajo culture and the significance of a hawk feather to her daughter. She also said she is introducing her son to drumming at the play space to help expose him to those traditions. As families explored the new play space beneath the colorful mural, children laughed, read books, and played together in the welcoming environment that CCHHS and their partners hoped to create. For more information about the Family Spirit Global Fellowship, visit the website at globalspiritcollective.org. For more information about the CCHHS, visit the website at coconino.az.gov/2124/health-and-human-services. Our last story from page 1 is They're Here, Mysteries on the Reservation. This story is by Candace Baez and a special to the Navajo Hopi Observer. This is episode 2, part 1 of 2, Something Outside My Driver's Window Continued. Turning his head to see what was there, Tom only noticed the reflection of the dashboard lights. Brushing it off, he continued looking straight ahead at the road. This time, there was movement alongside the passenger window. It seemed like something was running alongside my car, says Tom. It's like a dart, like a shadow. Out of the corner of my eye, it looks like a dog, like a large dog was running, standing up. It's like leaning forward, like a person coming out of the blocks who's running track. Immediately, he turned his head, but again did not see anything. With nothing there, Tom began to wonder if he was more tired than he thought. A few minutes went by, and then the shadow reappeared at his driver's window. I'm going like 60 miles an hour, and I'm thinking, like, obviously, what could be running outside my window at 60 miles an hour? One moment, the figure was at his driver's window, and the next, it was at the passenger window. But when Tom would turn directly toward the figure, it would be gone. It was like it was doing it on purpose, says Tom. If I was looking straight ahead, or if I turned my eyes slightly, I could see the thing running alongside my car. Now, questioning if he was hallucinating, Tom rejected the thought. If I'm hallucinating, how am I hallucinating alternating each side? Based on the silhouette next to his driver's window, Tom could tell the bushy head was turned toward the car and looking in directly at him. I think maybe what scared me the most was the fact that it appeared to be running and looking in at the same time, says Tom. Now terrified that this thing was inches from him, he could sense there was nothing playful about the situation. I felt like this thing was trying to scare the out of me, and it was working. I get the feeling that I could have been going 150 miles an hour, and this thing still would have been running right alongside my car, looking in at me. The black figure followed Tom for about 30 miles, appearing to run almost upright while alternating windows. Afraid that people would think he was a lunatic or a liar, Tom never spoke about this incident, not even to his sister when he finally reached her residence. Years later, Tom overheard two nurses talking about a new television show about the infamous ranch, and it seemed to perfectly describe what he had encountered that fateful night. Joining in the conversation to covertly investigate what had remained unknown to him for years, Tom instantly knew he had encountered a malevolent, shape-shifting entity the moment the women mentioned that they are known to run alongside vehicles on reservation territories. When they said that, the hairs on my neck stood up. I'm a grown man now, and even just telling you this story puts a chill in my spine because, like, just picturing that silhouette outside the window. 34 years later, Tom has never seen anything like it since. As an editor's note, this is the second installment of They're Here, Mysteries on the Reservation, which is an ongoing series examining reports of unexplained phenomena on and near the Navajo and Hopi reservations. This installment is a two-part story. Part two began last week. Accounts are based on interviews with named sources and presented as told. The Navajo Hopi Observer does not independently verify the events described. If you have an encounter of your own, we want to hear from you. Contact the series reporter at the website stories@theport-news.com. And now, before we move to page two, let me remind you that you can take Sun Sounds with you. You can get our streaming and on-demand services at the new Sun Sounds of Arizona app, both for Apple and for Android phone, and available in your app or Play Store. Moving now to page 2. TCHS Puppy of the Week. Meet Pinyon, Navajo Hopi Observer. Pinyon, a 3-month-old puppy described as looking like a teddy bear, is available through High Country Humane's Foster to Adopt program. The young pup enjoys water, carrying balls around, and playing with his foster sister, Giselle. His foster family says he is affectionate and expected to grow into a large dog. Pinyon is more curious and cautious around larger dogs, but is becoming more confident each day. According to his foster family, Pinyon would make a good family dog. He gets along well with other dogs and older children. Because he is still teething, he may not be the best fit for families with younger children. Pinyon is about 99% potty trained when taken outside every few hours. Otherwise, he reliably uses puppy pad holders. As with many puppies his age, he puts nearly everything in his mouth and requires supervision to help prevent accidental ingestion of unsafe items. Pinyon is currently available through the shelter's Foster to Adopt program and will be available for adoption after he is neutered. Those interested in fostering to adopt Pinyon can apply at the website at shelterlove.com/matchme/foster/TCHS/dog. For more information about Pinyon, you can contact the adoption coordinator, Deb, by text or phone at 928-853-1046. Next, we have a story. Curly Jones, lead Navajo Nation primary, advanced to the November 3rd election. Datelined Window Rock. Crystalline Curley and Justin Jones won the Navajo Nation presidential primary and will face each other in the November 3rd general election. Curley chose Chris Desheen, a former Arizona lawmaker and Army veteran, as her running mate. Jones elected Emily Ellison, a nonprofit executive and former candidate. Unofficial results showed Jones with 15,039 votes, Curley with 8,546 votes, and incumbent President Boone Grenn at 7,410, while voter participation was reported at less than 30%. The primary narrowed a 16-candidate field. Under Navajo election rules, the results are not final until the Navajo Election Administration canvasses the vote and certifies the outcome. Candidates must file campaign expense statements by July 31st, and any grievances over the conduct of the elections must also be filed by then. November 3rd has been set as the general election date, and voter registration for that election closes September the 24th. With absentee voting set to begin on October the 5th. For more information, you can visit the website at navajoelections.navajo-nsn.gov. And now the section called Around the Res, the week of August 5th. These are various news stories submitted for inclusion. 40th Annual Central Agency Fair, August 10 through 16. The 40th Annual Central Agency Fair will take place August 10 through 16 at Gorman's Arena in Chinle, Arizona. The event features an all-Indian rodeo, traditional song and dance, a parade through Chinle, royalty pageants ranging from baby contests to Miss Central Navajo, and a vendor village and carnival. For more information about this fair, you can visit centralagencyfair.org. Next story, Navajo Code Talker Honor Run, August the 14th. The Navajo Code Talker Honor Run will be held August the 14th in honor of the National Navajo Code Talkers Day in Window Rock, Arizona. The non-competitive 2-mile run follows the Code Talker Trail from the Navajo Nation Museum up to the Window Rock Arch viewpoint. Registration includes a performance t-shirt, sports towel, post-race snacks, and a choice of posters from the Navajo Code Talker poster series. For more information, you can visit NavajoYes.org. There is also a Code Talker 10K on September the 13th. The Code Talker 10K will take place on 13th of September in Window Rock, Arizona, starting and finishing near the Navajo Nation Museum. The 6.2-mile loop course travels through the museum grounds, the Navajo Nation Fairgrounds area, and nearby trails. The event honors the Navajo Code Talkers and includes timing, aid stations, race swag, and post-race refreshments. For more information, you can visit, this is a very long website, but the website is racemob.com/races/317106-Navajo-code-talker-10K. The next story is the 78th Annual Navajo Nation Fair, September 8 through 13. Save the date for the 78th Annual Navajo Nation Fair, 7 through 13 September in Window Rock, Arizona. This year's theme is Through Water and Mother Earth, We Exist. Community members and visitors are invited to celebrate Diné culture, ki, and the traditions and values that continue to strengthen the Navajo Nation. Next story is about the Chushka Challenge on the 26th of September. The Chushka Challenge is scheduled for September 26 in the Chushka Mountains area of the Navajo Nation. This mountain bike event features challenging terrain and elevation in the Chushka foothills and surrounding routes. The event includes course support, timing, and awards for participants. For more information, visit runsignup.com/Chushka Challenge Mountain Bike Race. The next story is 78th Annual Western Navajo Fair, the 8th through 11th of October. The 78th Annual Western Navajo Fair will take place October 8 through 11 in Tuba City, Arizona. Billed as the grand finale of the Navajo Nation Fair season, the event includes a parade, rodeo, powwow, Elder Fest, and concerts at the Western Navajo Fairgrounds. For more information, you can visit westernnavajofair.org. The Navajo Nation presidential election is taking place on the 3rd of November. The Navajo Nation general election will be held November 3, when registered voters will choose the nation's next president and vice president to serve a 4-year term. Polling location and hours vary by chapter, and eligible voters are encouraged to confirm their registration status and voting options ahead of Election Day. For more information, you can visit the website at NavajoElections.navajo-nsn.gov. Next story, Monument Valley Veterans Marathon on the 21st of November. The Monument Valley Veterans Marathon will take place November 21 at Monument Valley Navajo Tribal Park near Kayenta, Arizona. The course includes a marathon, half marathon, 4-mile and a 4-mile race on dirt and jeep roads through Monument Valley, featuring views of sandstone buttes and desert terrain. The event honors veterans and supports Navajo Nation wellness programs. For more information, you can visit runsignup.com/monument/Monument Valley M. The next story is Wednesday evenings at the ranch. Wednesday evenings at 6 p.m., approximately 7 miles west of Loop and 35 miles east of Flagstaff on Loop Road, Route 15, turn north at the sign The Ranch, go for 1.5 miles. For more information, you can visit the website at ranchhandsministry.com. Do you have an event or notice you would like to contribute? If you do, please send an email to nhoeditorial@nhonews.com. Other important ads on page 2 are the Tulani Lake Enterprises cultivates a healthy, safe, and prosperous community in the Little Colorado River Valley by strengthening food, water, and economic systems, empowering our youth, and promoting Native cultural knowledge. There is a one-day educational stewardship workshop on Monday, the 10th of August, 2026. If you are interested in this, you may call 928-686-6106, or you may email at admin@tulanilake.org. Also, a reminder that Northland Pioneer College is in fall registration, where your journey starts here. Classes start on the 24th of August, 2026. You can register at any location, or you may call 800-266-7845. Moving now to other news around tribal lands. Hopi Tribe opposes the rollback of Chaco Canyon land protections. This is by the Navajo Hopi Observer staff, and it is datelined Kikotsmuvi. The Office of the Chairman, the Office of the Vice Chairman, and the Hopi Cultural Preservation Office of the Hopi Tribe issued a statement Wednesday, July 29th, regarding the Department of the Interior's proposed renovation or modification of Public Land Order 7923, which currently protects approximately 338,690 acres of federal public lands surrounding Chaco Cultural National Historic Park from new oil, gas, and mineral development. Chaco Canyon and the surrounding landscape is a living place that holds culturally significant history and knowledge that continues to be deeply honored by the Hopi, Tiwa, Sinam, and our Puebloan brothers and sisters, said Hopi Tribe Chairman Lamar B. Kivama. Any reduction in the protections afforded to Chaco Canyon and its surrounding landscape undermines tribal sovereignty and the federal government's trust responsibility. Vice Chairman Micah H. Kiwa-Imptawa Sr. added that Chaco is not simply an archaeological site, but a living ancestral cultural landscape. For the Hopi Tiwa people, Chaco is an ancestral homeland, he said. The villages, shrines, roads, and sacred places through the greater Chaco landscape preserve the footprints of our ancestors and embody our history, teachings, and responsibilities to future generations. These lands are not relics of the past. They remain part of our living cultural identity. Kiwa-Imptawa said decisions that weaken protection for Chaco threaten irreplaceable cultural resources and disregard the enduring relationship between tribal nations and the sacred places. We urge federal leaders to honor tribal consultation, respect tribal sovereignty, uphold the federal trust responsibility, and preserve the greater Chaco landscape for future generations, he said. Known to the Hopi people as Yupaquoivi, the greater Chaco region is far more than an archaeological site, according to the tribe. It is a living cultural landscape where Hopi ancestors lived, migrated, prayed, exchanged knowledge, and were laid to rest. And those connections continued through Hopi religious practices, oral traditions, pilgrimages, songs, prayers, and cultural responsibilities to care for the land and its sacred places. The Hopi tribe has consistently advocated for protection of the Greater Chaco region and has participated in government-to-government consultations, environmental reviews, and cultural resource initiatives concerning Chaco for many years, the tribe said. The Hopi tribe formally opposes the proposed revocation of PLO 7923 and is urging the Department of the Interior to maintain the withdrawal, complete a full environmental impact statement, and resume meaningful government-to-government consultation before taking any action. The Office of the Chairman and the Office of the Vice Chairman affirmed their support for the following principles: protecting culturally significant landscapes, sacred sites, and traditional cultural properties; preserving archaeological resources and ancestral places from irreversible impacts; respecting tribal sovereignty and upholding the federal trust responsibility; ensuring tribal nations have a meaningful and substantive role in decisions affecting their ancestral homelands; honoring the indigenous knowledge and traditional cultural practices in federal land management decisions; promoting long-term stewardship through collaboration among tribal nations, federal agencies, state governments, and other partners. The tribe said it remains deeply concerned that reducing protections for the Greater Chaco region could result in irreversible impacts to ancestral sites, traditional cultural properties, and sacred landscapes that continue to hold spiritual and cultural significance for the Hopi people and other Pueblo nations. The Office of the Chairman and the Office of the Vice Chairman said they will continue to engage with federal, tribal, state, and local partners to advocate for the protection of Hopi ancestral sites, cultural resources, and ancestral heritage for present and future generations. This information was provided by the Office of the Chairman of the Hopi Tribe, whom you may reach by calling 928-734-3105 or by visiting the website at hopi-nsn.us. You are listening to Sun Sounds, the Navajo Hopi Observer, and I am your volunteer reader, Steve Knipe. Our next story, Montenegro. Arizona must defend water future after federal Colorado River plan. This is from the Navajo Hopi Observer and Dateline Phoenix. Arizona House Speaker Steve Montenegro said the state must be clear-eyed, united, and firm in defending its water future after the federal government released its final environmental impact statement, or FEIS, for post-2026 Colorado River operations that was released on Friday, July 31st. The federal plan outlines a range of possible reduction to the lower basin, which includes Arizona, but does not specify the exact cuts the state and other lower basin states will take over the next 2 years. Those specific reductions are expected to be announced next week in the Record of Decision and are projected to be at least 20% of the lower basin's total of 7.5 million acre-foot allocation. It remains unclear how the reductions will be divided among the lower basin states. A cut of 20% or less to Arizona's Colorado River supply would be the best-case scenario, while a larger reduction could have severe consequences, according to Montenegro's office. The decision carries broad implications for Arizona communities, water providers, agriculture, industry, and long-term economic growth, with effects varying by region depending on local water supplies and infrastructure. The Colorado River is vital to our state, and Arizona has spent decades preparing for drought, conserving water, storing water underground, and building a stronger water system, Montenegro said. Our job now is to stay prepared, continue protecting Arizona's rights, and defend our economy while making sure decisions in Washington recognize the contributions our state makes to national security and the economy. For more than three decades, Arizona has invested in conservation, efficiency, and underground water banking to prepare for drought and shortages, including those it faces today, Montenegro's office said. The Colorado River remains a key part of the state's water supply, but it is not the only resource. Reclaimed water, brackish groundwater, efficiency savings, and future augmentation projects are also available to bolster long-term water security. Water security is a central priority in the House Republican Majority Plan, according to the release. House Republicans say they will continue working with Arizona stakeholders to evaluate the record of decision once it is issued and to advance policies aimed at expanding the state's water supply and protecting rural and urban communities amid future growth. Montenegro, the Speaker of the Arizona House of Representatives, represents Legislative District 29 in the West Valley, including Goodyear and Surprise. You can follow him on the X at the @ Steve Montenegro. Our next story is Prescott College denounces the Trump administration's reduction of Utah National Monument lands. This is by Alan Hunt from the Daily Courier. Prescott College issued a statement to strongly condemn the Trump administration's action to reduce the scope of Bears Ear National Monument and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument near Utah's southern border. Trump issued proclamations on the 13th of July that reduced the size of the protected lands from 3.2 million acres to just 303,000 acres. This power is supported by the Antiquities Act of 1906, legislation that gives presidents the authority to create national monuments and to protect federal lands unilaterally. As a Prescott College faculty and community member, I am heartbroken by the attacks on Bears Ears and Escalante National Monument and the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition, said Dr. Cecil Goodman, Director of Adventure Education at the college. We must stand with the tribal nations whose current and ancestral stewardship has shaped these lands alongside the educators, scientists, students, and conservation organizations working to protect these extraordinary places. The sites, which feature canyon formations, petroglyphs, and a pair of buttes known as Bears Ears, are culturally significant to several indigenous tribes, among them the Hopi, Navajo, Ute Mountain, the Pueblo of Zuni, and the Ute Indian tribe of Uinta and Ouray Reservation. The Bears Ears site is co-managed by the federal government and an intertribal coalition, a unique arrangement that gives the five tribes greater decision-making influence. The Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument was created by President Bill Clinton in 1996, while President Barack Obama established the Bears Ear National Monument in 2016. both stirred controversy because of their large land designations. Trump issued proclamations reducing the size of both monuments in 2016, which were subsequently overturned by the Biden administration. Republican Governor Spence Cox of Utah was present for Trump's signing of the latest proclamation and expressed his approval at the reduced projections that could allow for mining operations in the area. The Bears Ear region contains several resources that are vital to energy and resource independence, and in turn critical to national security, the proclamation states. These resources, which include critical minerals such as silver, copper, molybdenum, lead, uranium, vanadium, and zinc, create jobs, fuel prosperity, and are essential to important sectors of the economy of the United States. Prescott College encourages community members to contact representatives in support of conservation and public land protection. As a college community, we recognize the Intertribal Coalition and the care with which they have stewarded these regions since time immemorial, said Dr. Mike Riley, faculty member of the college's Adventure Education Program. These areas are part of our Southwest classroom, and continued access to them is of the utmost importance for our college and our current and future students. The editor's note, a grant from the Arizona Local News Foundation made this story possible. The foundation awarded 15 newsrooms to pay for solutions-focused education reporters for 2 years. And now, Around Winslow for the week of August the 5th. This is from the Navajo Hopi Observer. Our first story, Wild West Fest will be held from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. on the 22nd of August at the Historical Courthouse in Holbrook, presented by the Navajo County Historical Society and the Holbrook Chamber of Commerce. The event will feature food, music, shopping, and activities for all ages. For more information, you can call the Chamber office at 928-524-6558, or you may email director@holbrookazchamber.org. Winslow's annual 9/11 memorial service will be held on the 11th of September at the 9/11 Remembrance Garden in downtown Winslow, home to a steel beam recovered from the World Trade Center. The ceremony honors first responders and victims of the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. For more information, visit the website at visitwinslow.com. The 95th Annual Navajo County Fair and Rodeo will be held the 16th through 19th of September at the Navajo County Fairgrounds in Holbrook, Arizona. The fair features rodeo events, livestock exhibits, carnival rides, live entertainment, and vendor booths. For more information, you may visit the website at facebook.com/navajo-county-fair-rodeo-1000-7993-0534-614. The Just Cruisin' Car Club's annual car show is expected for the 2nd through the 3rd of October in downtown Winslow, based on the club's stated schedule of holding the show each year on the first Saturday of October, which this year falls on October the 3rd. The event will include a poker run, burnout contest, and nearly 40 best of award categories on 2nd Street. For more information, visit the website at justcruisincarclub.com. Winslow Indian Healthcare is holding Taekwondo classes for 7 and older youth on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. To sign up and to reserve a spot, please call 928-289-8065. The Winslow Indian Healthcare Center distributes food every second Thursday of the month at the Health Center, 500 North Indiana Avenue, from 1:30 till 3:30 p.m. This is open to all. Call the WIHCC Nutrition Program at 928-289-6252, and the extension is 9069. If you would like to volunteer, and if you're interested, contact 928-890-8386, or you may send an email to volunteer@hotfood.org. The Winslow Public Library hosts Little Chef's Club on the last Tuesday of each month at 10:30 a.m. Youth 8 and younger are eligible to participate. Parents are also encouraged to participate. If you have questions, you may email them to library@winslowaz.gov or call 928-289-4982. And our final announcement of Around Winslow for the week of the 5th of August is the Fiber Folk Club. Interested in the fiber arts? Join the Fiber Folk Club on the first Friday of every month from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Northland Pioneer College Little Colorado Campus Library, which is located at 1400 East 3rd Street. If you have an event or a notice that you would like to contribute to this, please send an email to nhoeditorial@nhonews.com. A general announcement about the Hopi Board of Education Notice of Election. This is going to be held on November 12th, 2026, and there are vacancies by area at Hopi Junior Senior High School, Keams Canyon, Second Mesa, and Moad Kopi. There are polling sites available and candidate packets are available. If you would like more information on any of this, you can contact the Hopi Tribe Election Office at 928-734-2507 or visit www.hopischoolsystem.org. There is an announcement from Loop Schools, Inc., requesting proposals for accounting services for the fiscal year 2026. The full scope of the work is available by contacting the acting principal at Loop Schools, Inc. at 928-686-6211. The next story is about the Asai bike race that promotes wellness across the Navajo Nation. From 11-year-old first-time riders to 79-year-old cyclists, the Asai bike race is a community event that promotes family participation, fitness, and community connection across the Navajo Nation. The 9th annual race was held Saturday, the 25th of July, in the Chushka Mountains and is part of the Tour de Rez series. Unlike most Tour de Rez events, which feature dirt road trails, the Asai race follows a 17-mile paved course. Tom Riggenbach, the executive director of Navajo Yes, says we're trying to promote community wellness where you can get folks and families and neighbors out enjoying time together. That mission continues to drive the annual bike race, which brings riders together while encouraging healthier lifestyles across the Navajo Nation. Participants in the race ranged in age from 11 to 79 and traveled from communities across the Navajo Nation, including Chinle, Kayenta, Shiprock, Kirtland, and Montezuma's Creek. Rickenbach said participation in those communities has grown through family connections and word of mouth. And you may remember that during the COVID episode, these were stopped. The organizers of the 9th SAA bike race congratulated all 62 riders who took on the challenge of riding through some of the most beautiful Red Rock country on the nation. Tom Preller defended his title, grabbing his 6th win at the SIE. Jesse Frizzell took 2nd, while Gilbert Ben of Montezuma Creek took 3rd. Sarah Scott of Fort Defiance won the women's race, with Gina Parrish of Kayenta a close 2nd, and Rachel Jones took 3rd. Upcoming scheduled events include Man vs. Machine on the Rail Trail route in Shanto on the 22nd of August and the Chushka Challenge near Buffalo Pass on September 26th. If you'd like more information about future Navajo Yes events, visit NavajoYes.org. A quick story. Burglary charge could send man linked to Navajo elder's disappearance back to federal prison. The last person known to have seen a Navajo elder alive has been arrested in an unrelated incident, raising questions about whether he will be sent back to federal prison. Preston Tolth is the only person ever charged and convicted in connection with the 2021 disappearance of Begay, a weaver and grandmother of 9 from a remote community on the Navajo Nation who has never been found. He acknowledged stealing her truck, beating her, and leaving her on the side of the road. Her case has been emblematic of a heartache felt across Indian country where loved ones go missing or are killed. Begay's family said they were unaware that Tolth had left transitional housing. His arrest is the latest frustration in a case they say has offered little in the way of justice or closure. The eldest of Begay's 3 children, Gerald Begay, said he is relieved no one was harmed in the break-in for which Tolth was arrested. And that's all we have time for today's Navajo Hopi Observer. I'm Steve Knipe, and I invite you to stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds. Thank you for listening.